listening to What the Dev, the weekly podcast of ST Times. And now, here's Dave Rubenstein, editor-in-chief of ST Times.
Hello, everyone. Dave Rubenstein here. Recently, I had the opportunity to speak with Hans Dokter. He's the founder and CEO of Gradle. And we've been talking and writing a lot about software development and developer productivity and what's involved with that. And Hans has this interesting view that says it's vital for tech leaders to understand how cognitive fatigue is compounding the software productivity problem. So I didn't know a whole lot about that, so I thought we would dive into a conversation, and this is what it sounded like.
You know, I wanted to talk about this notion of cognitive fatigue and how it can affect developer productivity and what you actually mean by the term cognitive fatigue.
Yes. So first of all, why are we even talking about that in the context of developer productivity? What is kind of ironic, right, is that the industry, the software industry, has made so many other industries hugely efficient. But when you look at the efficiency of the software industry, it's almost a caricature how we produce software, right? So and I was thinking, hey, what is the problem, right? Why is there not more awareness on that? And we both know spring chickens, right, in the industry. 10 years ago, no one was talking about it. Your software efficiency company conference, how many people would have attended? Right. Not many, right?
At the time.
So fortunately, it's changing, but we're still quite immature, right? And I think we still need to develop the intellectual foundation for how to think about software efficiency. And when we look at other industries, let's say chemical industries, the car industry, first of all, the people who are responsible for efficiency, they're in super high esteem. Right, they can do a PhD in that area. Right, there is a huge history and culture around that, and they're experts in two fields. Right, when I'm a chemical process engineer, I'm an expert in chemistry, but I'm also an expert in the means for producing chemicals. I don't know, vessels and pressure and alloys or whatever. Right, is required. Same in the car industry, I'm an expert on cars, but I'm also an expert in robotics and welding or whatever, right? So when you look at software, right, the leaders who are responsible for these large software development teams, they're an expert in software. But the means of producing the software, what is that? The brains of the software developers. Yeah. And there is an extremely naive understanding about how those brains work. So you're making production decision without understanding how factory or the machinery works, and often I would say you don't even know what you don't know. You're very confident with your naive models about the brain, and that is creating a huge mismatch between the gut feel of the developers and the people who are making the decision. And I think cognitive science can bridge that. That's why I think it's so important. You need to understand, right, that the brain is what you're investing in, paying a lot of money for. So that's understand right. The brain and see what it means for software development. Okay, so that was my, prologue. So what is cognitive fatigue? I think without cognitive fatigue, we would have a completely different discussion, right? So the field of cognitive science, first of all, it's also fascinating. It's such an advanced field. There's so much knowledge that I think we just have to harvest for software, and we're just getting started, right? So there's a lot that we can learn from that. But anyhow, what cognitive science has discovered and also proven, right, is that there are two types of cognitive work, right? So the first is learned effortless routine, right? Where you have an input and an output, and you don't need to, there is established, there is programming in place, right? How to get from the input to the output, right? You you're walking through a forest and you're not running against trees, which is super complex, right? Not to do that, but there's nothing, there's no learning, right? It's programmed, right? But another example, maybe a little bit closer to what we are talking about, professional chess players, opening game. You can wake them up at 3 a.m. in the morning. They will not make a mistake with the opening, mm-hmm. right? Right. So they can do this. And then the second type of cognitive work, which is the most fascinating one, is tasks that require so-called cognitive control. So you have an input, you have a goal, but you don't know how to get to that goal. Right. So like writing code, right? You have to think about it. Right. So you need to figure out the actions to achieve the goal. Right. And you don't have the pathways established. That's when you're a professional chess player. Right. At one point, the space of possibilities grows exponentially. There's no, you know, that's the beauty of the game. So they're no longer effortless routine. Now you have to really work hard to win that game. And that's where you win or lose the game most of the time. Right. And it's pretty obvious, right, that when it comes to software, right, basically the activity where the meat is, if you like, right, that's where you need the cognitive control. The interesting thing is that the learned effortless routine is not leading to cognitive fatigue, right? You can do openings probably all day. You can walk through the forest all day. You're not like, oh, I can no longer figure out right how not to hit the trees. Your muscles get fatigued, not your brain, right? But activities that require cognitive control, they lead to cognitive fatigue. And I think this is really, really noteworthy because I think we are with software development still where we might have been with sports 50 years ago, no pain, no gain. The more it hurts, the better, right? There is no fatigue.
And no science for, you know, taking care of your body and things like that. No understanding.
Look at LeBron James.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look what he, how the rhythm he has between recovery, right? All the sports science, right? And his afternoon nap, right? This is not because he's late. Because he wants to be peak, right? And I think we're still kind of more in an archaic way of looking in terms of, you know, how our brains work when it comes to software. But it's the same thing, right? You need to understand your body to be just the athlete you can be. And as you said, right, all the sports science, right, has evolved so much and it has completely changed the game. That's why LeBron is still one of the best players in the world with 39 or something like that, right? It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't think 40 years ago it would have been possible.
Yeah. Interestingly, so, you know, we work in industries where a lot of thought has to go into what you're doing. When I'm crafting a story, you know, or doing interviews, coming up with questions, thinking about things and learning, at the end of the day, I'm exhausted. And my wife is like, what do you mean? You just sat on your ass all day looking at your computer. Can you be tired? It's like, it's cognitive fatigue is exactly what it is.
You know,
you're shot. You just everything. You just want to zone out for like an hour and try to recover, you know?
So, and the fascinating thing is, right, we have that experience. We have terms for that. I'm fried, right? I'm mentally exhausted. But there is still, it's still interesting because at the moment, there are only hypotheses what the biological explanation is for fatigue. So they did some new research showed there are certain chemicals that are accumulating, glutamate, or I mean, I'm not a cognitive scientist. And when this has reached a certain concentration, right, it doesn't work anymore, right?
Let me cut to the chase. How do you solve that problem for software developers?
Yes. Okay. No. Okay. So first of all, I would say, when is it a problem and when is it not a problem? So if I'm coming to work, right, and work 8 hours, and I'm completely cognitively fatigued after 8 hours, but that resulted in a lot of great code. Great, mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Rinse and repeat the next day.
Right.
So the problem is, right, for software developers, is a lot of stuff that happens during the workday that accelerates cognitive fatigue without leading to more output. That's the problem, right? And that's what we have to solve. Some people, you know, talk a lot about the flow aspect, right? That is related.
Right.
but it's not the same, right? So what we have to do for soft, first of all, we have to understand that cognitive fatigue that can be accelerated. And one experiment, one set of experiments is very important. Now we talk about one example, what you can do. Mm-hmm. Context switching accelerates cognitive fatigue, right? You can do, there's so many experiments where in psychology, where you continuously have to switch context and it's exhausting, right? And if you would do this sequentially, you know, 10 exercises of this type, 10 of the other, you would be much more effective than doing one. That is like, it's really, there's a lot of evidence behind that, but that is one problem, right? As software developers, there is a lot of unnecessary context switching.
Right.
And I give you an example, right? Flaky tests, right? So when you, as a software developers, right? All we have to, I think it's very important to reflect on a fundamental truth about writing software. Every line of code is a hypothesis, right? It's not, you can, for all practical purposes, not mathematically prove that this line is doing what it's supposed to do, right? And that's also not how AI is going to work. Again, AI also makes hypotheses, right? And then, and it's like a physicist, right, that has a theory about nature, you know, and then what do? They have a dialogue with nature via experiments, right? And the software engineer has a dialogue with the tool chain. Hey, compiler, what do you think? Hey, unit tests. Hey, functional tests. Hey, security check, right? That's the bread and butter, hypothesis, dialogue, feedback. So, and that's great. That's why we write tests, right? Otherwise, the customer has to give the feedback, right? Very often negative. So now, when you look at a typical enterprise developer, right? When we were kids, that was great, right? First, you know, program feedback, you got it in 100 milliseconds. Now, the feedback might take 5 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, many hours, right? So that's the one thing. You have a long feedback cycle. And then you have to start working on something else. Or you have to wait for the feedback, right? So that's one problem. But then the next thing, the feedback, is often very faulty. It's like when I had COVID for the first time, I had my oximeter and it was showing something like 88, which basically means call the ambulance. You are, you know, prognosis not very good. It was broken, right? And I was so stressed, right? I can imagine, right? But the feedback was wrong, right? And that is what developers have to experience every day, right? They run a pull request build, and I don't know what the percentage is, a very high percentage. It says something is wrong with your change, but in fact, something is wrong with the tool chain.
Right.
Huge problem.
Even just waiting for the pull request, you're going to be doing something else, and then all of a sudden, yes. Okay, it came through, now I have to switch and deal with that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it tells you, hey, something is wrong. Oh, no. And then you look at it, and no, everything is fine with my thing. There's something weird in the CI environment. And so that is a huge problem. And I think, so for me, as you said, right, the faster the feedback, the better. So one fascinating story, right? Google did some research that developers for feedback cycles that take less than 10 minutes, they wait. Now reflect upon that, right? People could say, oh, why lazy guys, why they're waiting? The way I look at it, this is an active strategy to avoid context switching and to optimize productivity. They're basically saying it's not worth paying the context switching, the mental cost of context switching, which is really you need to change the neural patterns in your brain, right, when you think about something else. So it's a productivity strategy to say, hey, the trade-off is not worth it, right? So now think about it. So when something takes 9 minutes, you wait 9 minutes. When something takes 4 minutes, you only wait 4 minutes. And if you can get it down to 40 seconds, you only wait 40 seconds. So this is one huge opportunity. Invest into accelerating feedback cycle. Microsoft Research, they have now evidence that they say every second of faster feedback within that range leads to more code. But the funny thing, David, that is for me almost the that's part of the caricature, right? If you would ask most companies, let's say Fortune 500 companies in the world, hey, how many feedback cycles are your developers running per day? What is the average time of a feedback cycle? And how often do they fail? And what is the reason for the failure? Those are almost like very simple questions. I guarantee you, hardly any of those organizations could give you an answer to any of those questions. Now try to improve it. What you don't even know,
right?
What even the most basic stuff of what's going on. So the way I look at it, right, that we are with the whole the complex developer tool chain, we are at a point where we were with web applications 20 years ago, before we had application performance management, or 15 years ago, right? You had no idea how often the shopping cart is not working, how long the checkout takes, nothing, right? Nowadays, it would be like a crime almost, right? Not knowing that. But that's where we are basically with when it comes to the machinery the software developers are using.
Right. Okay, so that was Hans Dochter, founder and CEO of Gradle. Thanks for being with us today. And thank you all for listening to the What the Dev podcast. Until next time, I'm Dave Rubenstein, editor-in-chief of ST Times. So long for now.